Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus. Welcome to the Voice of Olympus e-radio show on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Athena Victory may be joining us a little later on. She has adventures of her own to take care of today. Our guest is Cynthia Soroka Dunn, someone I've known for very many years, and she is one of the champions of Arcadia. Arcadia in Greek mythology is the untamed wilderness. And in this world of climate change, it's something we need to treasure and something we need to work hard to preserve. And Cynthia has devoted much of her time and much of her life to doing this. Welcome, Cynthia, to Voice of Olympus.
Hi, Hercules.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm doing well as well. Now, you are one of the most dedicated people I've ever met in terms of your focus with nature and natural things. How did that begin in you? When did you first become aware of it and cultivate it?
Well, when I was very, very little, I used to go up to the Adirondacks, especially Lake George, and I cultivated a love of nature and animals. And as my life got a little bit older, I started feeling an affinity towards them. And so I felt like I needed to speak up for these things that couldn't speak for themselves. And being that the case, the first thing that I did was when I was in grammar school, I found out that people were trying to develop Sterling Forest in New York State, and I wrote a letter to some representatives at that time asking them to please not do that. And that's when it all began.
So that was the first thing, the writing a letter to your representatives.
Yes, about Sterling Forest and how important it was and still is.
So what was the result? I know that they did develop Sterling Forest into the Renaissance Festival, if
no.
I'm not mistaken.
No, they've never developed it. The Renaissance Festival is just there during the summer for a couple of months, and they have a certain area for the buildings. But Sterling Forest is a much greater piece of land, a wilderness, in that same area that extends for many, many acres. And through the years, there's been numerous people trying to develop that land. And because of all the outcry against it, it has not been developed. And it continues to remain wild. And Senator Frank Lautenberg in New Jersey was one of the spearheads who also was part of that. I went to a hearing about it many years ago and spoke my mind at a hearing in front of many people in Monroe, New York. And then later down the road, there were other hearings and other places and times that people tried to develop it. And I again went out to those meetings and was able to voice my opinion and send letters to senators and to actually also the mayors and anybody else that I could think of, including even the governor of New York and New Jersey about it. And today it still is a pristine area. And also,
awesome.
Yeah, which is great. And also, not only that, but the fact that Senator Frank Lautenberg was a champion of that, there is a certain area in Sterling Forest that is named after him as well.
Awesome.
Yes.
So that is something I know that you're still doing. I know that you're still very much involved with communicating with politicians and with our leadership and raising awareness through speaking and sharing information. You're still involved with the animal folks, too, here in New Jersey, to protect the animals?
Yes. They are not able to speak for themselves, so I'm trying to speak for them, the deer and the bear, and there's still many other fights to be fought. They just killed a ton of bears in the state of New Jersey this year, and just been trying to stop the bear hunt, which is a horrible thing. And pretty much just trying to get the word out and protect the wildlife and nature. And not only is it because I feel like they are voiceless, so somebody needs to speak up for them, but also because the more that human beings interfere with the natural world as we know it, the more it affects us, our air and our water, and the more pollution and more development that we do. If you take down a tree, the oxygen from that tree that we get from it is gone. So imagine how many trees are being taken down every day and how much oxygen is being taken away from certain areas. And not only that, the heat index rises when you take down a tree. So you're having an effect of the heat going up, not just from fossil fuel emissions and all these things, but also from trees being removed. In Atlanta, Georgia, they actually started putting more trees back in the city, and it reduced the heat index a considerable amount because they did that. But also, when you take down a tree, if you have a house not too far away and that tree and its roots are taking in water, when it rains, the tree is gone. The water ends up going where? Well, where it can go. So you don't have the tree taking the water in anymore. So you get flooded in your basement. So just common sense things that people don't think about are reasons why we need to say something and do something. And climate change, of course, we are affecting every single thing that is around our environment. The more buildings we're building, the more things that we're doing to disrupt the natural world, it's affecting us, our breathing. It's affecting the way that people interact with one another. They have done studies that when people go out in nature, that they feel less stressed. And the fact is that we just keep getting more and more stressed because we keep building these places and we're not thinking about what we're doing. And also, most of the time, the people are doing it just for their monetary gain for that moment and not thinking about the future. It's not for your children or your children's children or anybody else down the road. Of course, that's one thing, but it's for people today. More and more people are getting asthma today, and that is the same reason, is because of how we are dealing with our environment and what we're doing to the animals. And the extinction rate is going up and up each day. They just put on the endangered species list the giraffe. And
really? I didn't know that.
Boggles my mind, yes. So it's a sad state of affairs.
What type of world do you visualize then? Because a lot of people would chalk all this off to the price of progress, and that humanity is a steward of this planet, so they must cultivate it and develop it and so forth. What type of world do you envision, like when you're fighting these battles and when you're speaking for the voiceless animals? Ideally, what would you like to see?
I would like to see everybody have an appreciation for the natural environment around them. And when they're building, to build and think about that as they're building. So they're building more greener buildings. They're building more things that fit in with the environment, not destroy it. And we would call building progress. But now we've gotten to the point where we are in destruction mode. So we've gone past, in certain areas that might not be the case, but let's say New Jersey, that is definitely the case, because we have gotten so much population and we are destroying things every single day more and more, to the point where it's like a concrete state. You know, New York City is concrete everywhere you look. I mean, there's very few trees, and they show that, you know, in Central Park, the amount of trees that they have there helps when you go there and breathe. But when you're sitting on the regular streets out in the city, you're ingesting pollution all the time. And between noise pollution and also just pollution, and the lights at night coming from cities all over the place, and also just in general, is drowning out the ability for some wildlife to be able to sustain themselves. Birds at night normally are sleeping, but because the lights are on in certain areas, they can't. So they become disorientated, and many other nocturnal animals can't stay in those areas or have to adjust, or they become extinct. So we're just driving, we're not thinking as we're doing all this stuff. And if we just spent a little time working with the environment that we have, that is part of what we have to live on, if we don't have it, we don't live, then maybe we would have a world that's a kinder, gentler world where we can incorporate everybody and everything, and we wouldn't have all these problems that we're having today.
Now, you also spend a lot of your free time. I know that you're president of the Demarest Nature Center, and you're on the Environmental Commission of your town. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Demarest Nature Center and your involvement with it?
The Demarest Nature Center is a tract of woodlands in Demarest, New Jersey. If you go to www.demarestnaturecenter.org, it's a nonprofit organization, 501(c). And what they do is, there is a tract of land, many acres, that they have preserved with trails, and we just are the stewards of that land. We help cultivate it. We make sure that it's protected, and we don't allow hunting in there. We don't allow anything that is detrimental to that environment. And people are now, when the Nature Center was first formed, people were against having it. Now, since they finally agreed to it, and it's been in existence for now over 40 years, now people who are buying houses in that town are trying to buy houses close to this nature center, because it increases the value of their property compared to the way people used to look at nature, that, oh yeah, it's just a bunch of woods, we can knock the stuff down. Now, because there's less and less of it in this county, in Bergen County, there is no, you know, so people are striving to get to it. It's a beautiful area, and there's many things, wildlife in it, and it's around the Tentacle Brook, which is also part of the drinking water, so it protects the drinking water as well. And we just signed another 20-year management agreement with the town of Demarest and the DEP of New Jersey to get that done. Took over 3 years of a lot of work and tireless hours to get that to the point where it got passed. So I have been on the board of directors for 6 years, and unfortunately after 6 years you have to take a step down because of term limits, which is kind of a good thing because it gives new blood to the Nature Center, and it gives new people, younger people, and diversification to the board. So that's what I've been involved with the Nature Center for that long.
I had the honor of being part of that for a couple of years, and unfortunately my time is no longer as free as it once was, but I enjoyed much of my participation there very much, and I know that they'll do an excellent job because I've been sitting on the meetings, and everyone is very dedicated and very focused and very committed to preserving the Nature Center.
What's interesting,
on environmental... Yes.
Well, one more thing about the Nature Center, which is what's interesting is I was at a party where there was a bunch of people there from previous boards and current boards of the Nature Center. And what was interesting was a comment that was made by a woman who said, you know, I've been on many different boards throughout the years, and I've seen all of the people trying to one-up one another to try to put their foot and get their name, this information on their CV and their resume that they were involved in this and this was their goal. And instead of doing that with the people who are on the board of the Nature Center, from all walks of life, whether they were Democrats, Republicans, Independents, whatever it was, they all on the board had the same vision, which was protect that tract of land. So that's a pretty amazing thing, and not one person had a big ego to try to dominate one another or make something else go on. That was the goal of every single person who's been on the Nature Center board, which is a really amazing thing.
Everybody's so it's in good hands. You're stepping down as president, and I believe Kevin is going to be the president.
Yes, he's likely going to be the president. The vote is going to be at the reorganization meeting in early January, then the whole new board comes on.
Whoever's in charge, I know they'll do a great job. If Kevin's in charge, it'll definitely be a great job. He's an awesome, dedicated individual.
Yes, definitely. So he's another person who's been so excited and very dedicated to the Nature Center.
I can no longer participate starting in the new year, but through one of my radio shows, I hope to be able to provide a service to the Demarest Nature Center in getting their voice heard out there on a steady basis. So I'll be presenting this to the board as soon as I get it organized. Like me, you're also on an environmental commission in your town. So care to share a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. The Environmental Commission is always trying to beautify and change the town to make it more associated with the natural world around us, and to make sure that things are being followed in the town that you would normally not see. Because the Environmental Commission's also goal is to get to the point where they do what's called Sustainable New Jersey, which Sustainable New Jersey is a whole program that is to try to get towns in the state to follow Sustainable New Jersey and be able to, you know, promote different things about recycling and about, you know, what to do with, wastewater, what to do with all these different things, and to have goals and objectives on how to do that, how to help the school in your town to become sustainable. So it's a nonprofit organization also, Sustainable New Jersey, and they're trying to get the towns to get more proactive in this way because, again, they're seeing that the more trees that are being taken down, that there's soil erosion, and what happens if it's on wetlands or in areas that are lower lands, it ends up flooding that area because they take this stuff away. So all these kind of programs clean up the town, you know, of the garbage. Let's say there's people throw garbage all the time when someone drives by, do different things, or it just happens to move because of the winds. So cleaning up the town, doing things that are just proactive to help the town.
I'm on the the commission in Tenafly, and I know that folks here are very dedicated as well. And recently, the Environmental Commission took a stand on the balloons because Mylar balloons and helium-filled balloons cause great damage, more so than most people would possibly imagine. So although we're not trying to keep people's fun, because balloons are fun and balloons are very much a part of many of our celebrations, it's become very clear that we do need to become aware of what happens to the balloon after it floats up past your vision. And they've caused damage to sea life. They've caused property damage to electric lines, you know, causing all sorts of fires and electrical problems. So the balloons are a hazard.
Yes, that is a hazard, a big hazard. And the other thing that's a big hazard is idling. One of the things that we're trying to accomplish is the state of New Jersey has a no idling law that you are not supposed to idle a car more than a few minutes. If you do, you can get fined by the police in any town in the state. A lot of towns don't enforce this. The problem is that the pollution from just sitting in a car and letting it idle is horrendous, and on top of it, a lot of the people who do this are next to schools, so the kids are breathing in the fumes from the cars, sitting idling, waiting for their kid to get out of school or dropping them off, and it's become an epidemic. So that's another issue that we're trying to accomplish, which is to get people to realize that you should not be idling past a few minutes if you're sitting in your car, unless it's an emergency.
You're a font of lots of information. When this new show launches, I'm going to invite you back to be a regular because you're very well informed about what's happening here locally in the area. And some of the other folks I have are also very much involved and informed. So it'll be a good place to share all this information because I know it's tough to go to meetings all the time. And there's so many meetings that they can eat up your life before you know it.
Yes,
so hopefully this will be able to provide a forum and we can have roundtables like I have with some of the other topics that I cover. So we can actually focus on these and work together a little bit better.
That'd be great.
Now, your love of nature extends to photography and you're a nature photographer. And I've seen some of your images. They're beautiful. Care to share a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, sure. I've been a professional photographer for over 20 years, and because of my love of nature, I figured that something clicked one day where the idea of, instead of just taking pictures that you normally would take, to actually show the natural world as it is and wildlife, if possible, to show what it's like and how beautiful it is. And I wanted to foster in other people the idea of to appreciate nature and the wildlife that lives within it. And mainly that was the goal, and to get to the point where I am selling these photographs, and some of the money from the photographs, once it gets to a certain point, would go to help organizations that preserve these wild places, including
awesome.
Like the Lake George Conservancy, and there's other places around the country that are, you know, looking for these kind of donations and stuff, but, you know, something that gives back as well as shows the beauty of it. And you could look at my photographs. If you Google my name, Cynthia Soroka Dunn, you'll see some of these photographs. But the main thing is to kind of like let people realize how amazing, you know, nature is and how amazing this world is as a whole, you know.
And one of the things you've done through the Demarest Nature Center is you had a contest yearly where other people can share their appreciation through their photographs. And last I remember, these were being put into a calendar as well so that more people could share these wonderful images.
Well, what they're going to do now is the once a year they have the photography concert when photography contest, not concert, when they have it so that people can enter and show photographs of the Nature Center go in and take pictures during the year and then, you know, show their photographs and enter the contest. And then they get rewarded some small cash prizes and some notoriety. They get to be shown on the website, the ones that won. And the calendar right now hasn't been done yet, but they're talking about starting to use some of these photographs on sort of like Twitter and stuff to promote the Nature Center and on our website. So it kind of is a twofold approach. But usually the contest is in June at the Breakfast in the Woods, which is run by the Nature Center.
And although here we differ in our opinions, because I'm a carnivore, partially for health reasons, I'm diabetic as well, you have renounced meat and you are a vegan because you care so much about animals, and that's a strong statement somebody could make. Would you like to share a little bit about that as well?
Sure. I guess it was 18 years ago, I was... Because of the fact of being involved in the environment, you start seeing all the things and how we, as a society, what we do to the animals when the animals are killed and how horrible that is and how horrible their lives are. They live very short lives and they are abused, and it's just a horrible, horrific thing. I kind of feel equating it to the Holocaust for animals because that's really what it is. But when I started to awaken to this idea of what they were going through, because I had no idea, you see beef, you don't think of the cow, you see pork, you don't think of the pig, you know, you don't think of what these animals are there for. It's not just to eat, you know, it's to appreciate. Probably I would say people who are Native Indians of this country probably did it as best that you could, whereas they would appreciate the animal's life before they would, you know, put them to slaughter. But I just got to the point where I couldn't even look at it. So I decided to become vegetarian. A friend of mine at the time was also considering it and said to me, well, I would think that I want to be a vegetarian, but I don't think I can. And I didn't think I could either, but I said, you know what, let me try it. I tried it, and I never looked back. And then about 2 years ago, after I had become lactose intolerant, which about 5 years ago, all of a sudden I went from being able to drink milk and eat cheese to then one day I couldn't eat anything. So I said, all right, well, I'm dairy-free now, so all I'm eating is eggs. But then when I found out what they do to the baby male baby chickens and that they slaughter them by throwing them in a meat grinder alive, I just said enough, and I said, I throw my hands up, I'm not doing this anymore. And from that moment on, I have been vegan, and that's the way I hopefully will stay. But I would just like to see people who do eat meat to appreciate what the animal is and change factory farming, because all it is just, it's horrific. It's a horror movie.
I agree about factory farming because I've seen what that is. And when I was young, I used to go to Greece every summer, and we lived in a very rural environment. The animals there are, you know, free to roam around until they're eaten. And the meat tastes so much different. Even chicken tastes so much different. Here, chicken tastes very bland, like nothing. But there, it's very flavorful, and it's very clear that you're eating meat. And the other meats as well, and they supplement with hunting. So there is an appreciation for the fact that life must be lost for life to continue elsewhere. And that understanding is very much a part of the spirituality. When we lived in Pennsylvania also, where a lot of people were into hunting, not all of the hunters were heartless and cruel. A lot of them were, again, very reverent of nature, you know, very aware that something was dying so that they could continue to live. So the old Indian spirituality is still around. And yes, when you start treating animals like they're vegetables, you know, people are treated like animals, what do you call it? You're unbalancing the world in a very radical way. But you are right. A lot of animals suffer needlessly because of the way we currently have everything set up.
And what's amazing is Paul McCartney said this. If you took down the walls of a slaughterhouse and you were able to look inside, probably 80% of the people would either change what they're doing or they wouldn't eat it because of how horrific it is. But
and
you don't think of
is.
That when you go to the store. You look at it, oh, this is what it is, okay, here. There's no connection. It's like that connection is lost in the way that the mass markets and all this stuff is put out, and at restaurants and things like that. You really don't think when you're eating.
And on that happy note, we will move to break, mm-hmm. and we'll be back in a few minutes. Cynthia, thank you, and I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation after the break. The song that we're going to hear is Dom the Bard, Land, Sea, and Sky.
All that is true. International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings, this is Hercules Invictus on Voice of Olympus here on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Today's guest is Cynthia Soroka-Dunn, and we're kicking off the Champions of Arcadia. Greetings, Cynthia. Thank you for being so patient during the break.
No problem, Hercules.
So we were talking about your vegetarian lifestyle and what it was that opened your eyes to the injustice done to animals and how this led to you becoming a vegetarian. Again, the part of why you're a champion of Arcadia is because you're not just speaking about something, you're doing something about it. And not everyone will agree with everything that you're doing, but the fact is that you are doing something, and that is to be greatly admired. That's the heroic way of Olympus. Now, you also have a radio station of your own where you focus on nature themes. Would you care to tell us about that a little bit?
Yes. I had a nature show called Nature Mountain Radio, and it was on the system Live 365. And Live 365 went out of business, so I was lost, you know, had a station without a home. And supposedly in the new year, they're going to be coming back. So if that
awesome.
Is the case and it works, then I will also be coming back. So you have to look for Nature Mountain Radio. At the time, in the first, it started with music. And then I was going to interview some people once in a while as well. But it's all surrounded the music as well, nature and the environment. You know, songs about nature, songs that gel with nature and the environment and animals and just that kind of scenario. Nothing berating anybody, but more appreciating what we have again.
When you're up and running, let me know, and I will gladly link to it and let people know about it.
Oh, thanks, Hercules. I will definitely do that.
Oh, thank you. And when we first met way back, it's been well over a decade now, you were a writer of science fiction books. And I remember that I read them at the time and I greatly enjoyed them. And I enjoyed them so much that I even sent them over to a friend across the sea who had a role-playing game company. I don't think anything came of that. But I was impressed by the books, and they're still available, from what I understand.
Yes, they are. The books are under my, I guess, my unmarried name, which is Cynthia Soroka instead of Cynthia Soroka-Dunn. And they're called The Dark Chronicles. And if you go on thedarkchronicles.com, you'll see them all there. And also one of them is an e-book, the first version. So if you go on any of the regular book companies' websites, including Barnes & Noble, and search out The Dark Chronicles by Cynthia Soroka, you will find the e-book there. And you can download it and, you know, go and read it. And then if you're interested in any other ones, You can email through the website so that you can let me know that you're interested in buying the other ones. So there's six of them in total, and they're dark fantasy mainly, with some twists and turns. And, you know, it's a very interesting series, put it that way.
Yes, it is. It's very different. And are you still thinking of making it into a role-playing game?
Well, I'd love to make it into a role-playing game. I have ideas of how to do it. I needed more people to get involved, or a role-playing game company to get involved, and that didn't happen. I actually did write a script based on the first book, and have been trying to shop it to places, to film companies and stuff. But, again, nothing has transpired at this point, but you never know in the future. And one of the things I did in the books, I made sure that the books themselves were printed with recycled paper. So
very awesome.
That's also in the vein of protecting the environment. So.
And that's good. Like me, you take everything you do and try to fit it into your life work somehow and make it relate to what's really important to you. So that's a good thing. And I know that it takes a long time to do those things. Journeys into entertainment, things often happen unexpectedly and come to you from like a right angle where you weren't expecting them. But still you got to plug away at the things that you're doing, and you never know when or if they're going to happen, but you can't give up the plugging away. And sometimes people come out of left field remembering a conversation you had with them years ago, and all of a sudden things start up again. You take it off the shelf and you dust it off. So it's a never-ending process. But it's good that you're still doing that, and you're still trying to expand that universe. And you had a very interesting style of writing. It was kind of like a free-form style of writing where it was kind of like stream of consciousness, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I focus more on the dialogue between the characters than the main descriptions, because... and also I actually made sure that the chapters were very short, because I remember when I was reading voraciously and reading a lot of books, I would end up kind of getting to the point where I was always thumbing through to see when the end of the chapter was, and I didn't want anyone to do that. So the chapters are only a few pages each, so it goes very fast. I've had people read the book, like one of the books, in maybe, you know, a few days as opposed to months of, you know, going through a book. And, you know, that's pretty amazing to see somebody do that. So, you know, because they're not thinking about when the end of the chapter is, they're just thinking about the story. So it just keeps the momentum going.
There's now several role-playing companies, Dungeons & Dragons, through their open gaming license. I don't know if they started it, but they certainly popularized it, where they made it possible for third parties to take whatever content they had and use the rule system, as long as they posted a notice or got an official licensing, or I don't really remember how the process worked out, but I'm dealing with gaming companies again. I started reviewing, and I'm now actually working on three products for gaming companies, but they all seem to have the content, and then they license different gaming systems, and most of the sales are done electronically now as PDFs. And there are several really good sites that sell the PDFs. And, of course, you could still buy them in physical form. But they're relatively inexpensive, so the hobby is spread like wildfire. And a lot of the stuff I'm involved in is phenomenally exciting. I'm really, really getting into it. And I think after being involved with the hobby since its inception and running all those years of games in schools and institutions, I would have gotten like burned out. But no, all of a sudden, you know, I'm excited again. It's like the beginning of the hobby, and there's all sorts of wonderful things. So as I learn more about that, I'll be able to share that information with you, and you might want to look into it. It might not cost that much to get a license and use a system, and then it would just basically involve learning the mechanics of the system and then translating your characters and their nemeses and whatever strange beasts are in the book into like a bunch of statistics. So I will let you know about that.
That sounds very interesting. And it's so neat how the electronic world has really sprung up ways of doing things that you could never think of before. And also, it does help save the environment because you're not printing so much stuff.
That's very true. Before we, and we're already at the end of the show, we've got less than 10 minutes, I do want to touch upon your father, too, because your father was a very interesting individual, and although sometimes we may not like everything about where we came from, like anything else in life, our parents, our family, our heritage, our community do influence us in some really profound ways and help to make us who we are. And your father was rather unique in the types of things that he focused on and the types of things that he did. So would you care to give us a brief intro to your dad? We may need to extend this into another episode, but just so we get started with the process.
Sure. His name was George Soroka, George E. Soroka. Some people called him Reverend George Soroka. He was a reverend of his own invention, and he had books that he wrote on stress management. He started out in biofeedback and then ended up going beyond biofeedback. He wrote a book called Biofeedback Without Machines. And it was more he learned that the body, you weren't just treating symptoms of one area of the body, that you should be treating the entire body instead, as a whole, to kind of harmonize with one another and be able to go. He ended up delving into energy work and becoming an energy healer. And then he wrote other books about things involving your own life and how to deal with things in real life situations and flight or flight situations where you felt like, you know, you were going to be eaten by a tiger when you really weren't, and things of that nature. And he also tried to help others to achieve, I would say, enlightenment in some respect, in different forms of different types of meditation practices.
Yeah, he was certainly a pioneer, and he wasn't afraid to go into the fringes. The fringes, as those of us who explore them know, is a very dangerous place, though, because you're no longer in the safety of the paradigm that society provides you with. And even though it's very restricting and it's bound by fear and doubt and all sorts of other extreme emotions to kind of keep you in the paradigm, the outer rim, to use a Star Wars term, of what is known, is you don't know what's there. And all you have are the accounts of people who've also been there. So your father is definitely one of the people who's been there. And I know I've read several of the books and I've reviewed a few of them. And I can certainly vouch for some of the things that he found, because I've been there and I've kind of come to a lot of the same realizations. But it is dangerous being on the fringe.
Yeah, and he would say, and he would say things to sometimes shock people to get to a place so that they could deal with their own insecurities and their own boundaries, so that they could go beyond it and not feel put down by themselves. So even though society might try to put someone in a certain place or put a label on them or tell them what they should be or do or how to operate, he would try to push the boundaries with them and see if they could go further, and to believe in the fact that we are all energy, and that everything is energy, and that we are not disconnected from anything, and everything we do, no matter what it is known, even if it's not by some, you know, our society or whatever, it is known on a universal level, with a lot higher meaning than we can even imagine.
And he was, like you said, he was very confrontational in the way he presented his information, and it would shake you, But the conditioning process, the social conditioning process, is so pervasive that it's invisible. And if you're not shaking a little bit, you really are not going to be able to see it, because you've been programmed not to look at it. And you've been programmed not to examine it. You've been programmed not to question it. And once you start questioning and examining and trying to find alternatives, you find yourself like Alice into the rabbit hole. And we are fortunate in a sense, and the information age has helped in this regard as well, in that when I first started my explorations, which started very young, the information that I needed was obscure. So you had to find references to it in other books. Then you had to try to find these books and hope they were in English. And it would cost a lot of money and take a lot of time for antiquarian booksellers to locate these books somewhere on the planet and get them to you. Of course, some of them were worth the wait and others really weren't. But you have to really seek this information and digest it and try to piece it together. And it happened very slowly. Now with the internet, you can find 10 free copies of it on PDF or on a website with the different translations. So in a sense, that's very good, because this information is now readily available. And so if you want to explore the fringes of consciousness, there are a lot more tools available to you. But in a way, it's not so good, because in the earlier times, you have time to really digest this information. And because it was so difficult and it took so long, you were really, really, really invested in making use of the information once you tracked it down or figured it out. And now there's so much of it, you can get flooded with the information and not really process it as well.
Yeah, there are a lot of people out there also who are trying to say things that sound similar or sound the same to confuse and miss, fake news out there to, dissuade people from doing certain things or to make people scared of the fact that they are an all-encompassing being, and each person onto themselves has everything they need within their own situation. They just have to see what they're doing and be aware of what they're doing. And most people are unaware and asleep, and that's why we have all these problems in all the governments and everywhere else, because we are all just following or accepting what is not even questioning. And those people are doing the same thing. They're in their little boxes thinking that it's everything they're doing is right, but there's definitely a higher power at work, and we really don't have control of a lot that we think of.
That's very true, and that's a realization in of itself. The system that I follow, and it's not really a belief system, it's more a practice system. And we have a connection also, for full disclosure, through the Charles Atlas Company. And my spiritual system is very similar to that, or any other type of exercise system, that if you do something, you'll get a result. So instead of doing something physically, this is doing something with my mind, doing something with my soul, with my spirit. And it consists of a series of exercises. And just like the exercises you do physically, like if you want to have huge muscles, there are certain things you do. If you want to have endurance, there are other things that you do. And they're not the same things often. You can become well-rounded and do a little bit of everything. But depending on what you want to accomplish, that's the type of exercise you're going to need to look at and to follow. So it's the same thing with the spiritual exercise. So I guess it would be like an orthopraxy rather than like an orthodoxy, which is you have to believe certain things. I really don't believe anything. I go with functioning beliefs that this seems to work or this seems to explain things, and keep it until it stops working or stops explaining, and then I'll seek a new answer. But you are right. We have within us much more than we think we do. And part of the control system is putting it in your head that you don't.
Yeah. And believing that you're small. When they say that, the stars in the universe all the stuff in our bodies are comprised of similar things. And if you look at our eyes, they're particles from the Big Bang. I mean, there are so many different things that we, you know, quantum physics, that there are multiverses, not just one universe. And that we're just, you know, thinking that we're these, doing all this stuff and what's going on in the universe compared to what's going on here. You know, we're not thinking big, we're thinking too small.
And that is the theme of the next show we're launching. This is Voice of Olympus, and starting in March, it's going to focus more on mythic thinking and Greco-Roman type of ideas and so forth. And Pride of Olympus is going to focus on cosmic Olympianism, which did open the mind. You know, the solar system was considered your local neighborhood. So that's where we're going to go with the next show. And since you're well-versed in that area as well, I'd love to continue this particular conversation on that show, because that's all it's going to be about. It's going to be about our largeness, the fact that you know, this is an illusion and so on and so forth. So I will add you to the list. I have 10 guests so far. You're the 11th guest.
Okay. Thank you, Hercules.
You're welcome, Cynthia. And now we've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for being on and for introducing us to your multiverse. And I look forward to the time you come on again. How can folks get in contact with you?
If you Google my name, Cynthia Soroka Dunn, and you will find my photography website, and you go on there, you'll be able to email me directly through that site. And you know, if you go on the darkchronicles.com, you will also be able to find me and find an email to send to me. So I'm readily accessible.
Thank you, Cynthia. I wish you joyous journeys and many great adventures, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Same to you, Hercules.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. Another show has come and gone, and season 3 of Voice of Olympus is fast approaching, as is season 1 of Pride of Olympus. And I wish all of you joyous journeys. I wish all of you great adventures, and I will speak with you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.